off your jacket, because it's time to get deep under the covers with a loose read.
Morena, Karen, how
Morena,
are you?
I'm well, how are you?
Very well. We've got a special guest in the studio this morning.
It's a bit of a treat today. We have, I've brought someone with me. His name is John Payne.
Hello.
And hello, John. And I feel like it's really significant to have John here because he designed the BFM logo.
Yes, you absolutely did. I just was... showing off my brand new BFM hoodie, which has the logo, Pride of Place.
And it's such an iconic logo, BFM is never allowed to change it.
I don't think that's in any question ever.
Right. At the time when I designed it, it used to change pretty much every year. They'd have a competition and change the logo, you know. And then Chris Knox did that crazy monster one, the monster holding the speakers.
That one's pretty awesome.
Kind of hard to read once you were sort of 20 paces away. And Liz Tan was the station manager when she sort of went hunting for someone to do a new logo. And at the time, tagging was all over the news, you know. And so we went, let's do something that you could tag in a bus stop. So I got a Vivid out and did the BFM logo, and there you go.
And it hasn't changed since. No. Well, this is very exciting. Also, people will, of course, know you from the Hallelujah Picassos.
That's right. That's been a long and wonderful association that goes back to the early 90s. In fact, the thing we're talking about today is something that I've done with Peter McLennan from the Picassos and his partner Jack Tweedy. And I think I met Peter and we first started making things in the late 80s.
Fantastic.
Yeah, a hell of a long time ago.
The book that we've got, John has just written his first book, and it's called The Golden Sword, A Secret History of Thomas Stamford Raffles.
Hmm.
And published by Dunbar Known, the outfit you were just referring to. Yeah. And Jack Tweedy, the publisher, described it as Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness via Lee Fawkes, the Phantom.
Very cool. What do you think
of that, John?
I love that. She mentioned that to me in an email and said, this is what I think of it. And she didn't know that as a child I had this, I inherited a box of comics from my older brothers.
Yeah.
Some classic stuff. And there were about a dozen issues of The Phantom in there that I read and reread and reread until the newsprint fell apart.
Oh.
So that's a perfect reference, really. And the book has a lot of strange kind of touchstones, and some of them are a bit uncomfortable, like sort of Victorian novels and that sort of stuff. But one of the things that's also in there are the jungle adventures and
fantastic,
that kind of romantic nonsense.
It's a bit of a bonkers stampede into the colonial period minefield, isn't it? And I guess, I mean, Sir Thomas Raffles founded Singapore, right, in British Malaya. Yeah. And there's a whole kind of accepted narrative around that. Are you kind of shaking that up a bit with your book?
Yeah, definitely. The accepted narrative is a real kind of whitewash. I mean, I went to Singapore for work in 2006 and ended up working in the region for about a decade. And you encounter the Raffles stuff all over the place in Singapore, but it's really shallow. There's not actually any tangible sort of story there.
Right.
And being a New Zealander, when you encounter a colonial figure that's had a bit of a whitewash, you assume, like Governor Grey or Auckland or Busby, that the whitewash is there to hide an arch criminal, the money-grubbing, war-mongering, land-stealing a-hole. And it turns out that with Raffles, the story's quite the opposite in many respects. The whitewashing was done posthumously by his widow, who wrote a book about his life, and she wanted to make sure he was normalised into someone that could be put on a plinth as a hero of empire that was fading fast. But the reality is he was wildly eccentric, a middle-class, self-made guy with a big-ass chip on his shoulder who just kind of knifed like a warm knife through soft butter through the complacent kind of East India Company stuff was there. And he was a new liberal. You know, his heroes were Byron and Shelley and Samuel Marsden and people like that. So he wanted to uplift and form partnerships, and he was going against the grain, and he fell off the wagon and did some horrible things along the way, which he regretted, you know, to his credit. But the book is only kind of it wears the coat of a history to tell a completely fictional tale, really.
The best kind of books, I feel, tend to do something like that.
Well, that's history for you, isn't it? And it's mostly fiction, really.
Yeah, depending on whose hat you're wearing, it comes out very differently. Yeah.
So this is kind of historical fiction, and it's a little bit romantic and a bit fantastic.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it's... what I thought I'd do for a first book, I thought I'd just start with something light. So the idea of kind of tackling colonialism and where a whitey can stand to encounter Indigenous culture, mm-hmm. and always get it wrong. And that's definitely his story,
right.
And it was definitely mine as well, you know, but the best intentions are really all that matters. Whether you're dealing with you know, Malay Indigenous people or people of Java or the people of Aotearoa, you know, all you can do is do your best and try to understand and learn.
Yeah.
And that's at the heart of the book, really. Also, getting it wrong and
yeah.
paying the price, that's at the heart of it as well.
It's a huge part of it.
Yeah,
huge part of colonial histories, really. Yeah.
Yeah, but what the hell else are you going to write about? You know, it's like, I'll get that out of the way first and then I'll start writing about the
then
big
thing. Then
I'll
do something frivolous
thing.
And, yeah.
What would you write next?
I'm thinking of doing something not entirely dissimilar, but around this neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. I think Auckland's kind of fascinating, mm. and it's the origins of it, Auckland's sort of history, of the waterways, mm. say, down Grafton Gully, mm-hmm. And where the motorway cuts in. Those were some of the first early settlements, and I think they mm. must have been kind of fascinating. So I'm thinking of recreating some of those and telling a story that recurs kind of up till now, something like that.
Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Really so. Exciting. Well, thank you both for coming up this morning. What a treat to have you here, John. And, of course, as we always love having Curran in the studio, yeah. we are going to play some Hallelujah Picassos now because okay. it's very fitting, I feel.
Okay. I thought I'd better just plug, though, that the book is available exclusively currently at Time Out.
Excellent.
Books in Mount Eden.
And you know what you can do at Time Out Books? You can flex your B card and get your 10%
discount. 10%
discount.
It's $35. Come and flex it.
Fantastic. Yeah, flex it. Well, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Why? You're going somewhere. Sit down on a hill and start to unwind. Rewind, rewind.
Picasso boss, they never leave you behind. Busting out all over CD and cassette. Fret you, I fret you, I don't hear nothing yet. Yes, I'm coming down, I said to put it all back. Don't care if you're white and I don't care if you're black. Yes, I'm coming down up on the 24 track. Mix it up, now Chris, I said live and direct. Say rewind, rewind, this is part of my design. Say rewind, rewind, this is part of my design. The lyrics from my head, just a nice up rewind. So be Picasso boss, they never leave you behind.
That was Loose Reads.
That's it.